Eric Metaxas here. Please join me in a life-saving mission to set Sudanese slaves free through Christian Solidarity International. Since 1995, CSI has freed more than 100,000 women and children from years of bondage and abuse. Your $250 gift frees, feeds, and heals these captives and sets them on a path to a new life in freedom. Please help us free another slave now. Call 888-253-3522, 888-253-3522, or click the CSI banner at MetaxasTalk.com, MetaxasTalk.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show.
It's the show you've all been waiting for. Until now. Until literally right now.
Now!
Literally right now. Literally. Now your host, Eric Metaxas.
Folks, welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. You know, in this Christmas season, we like to do something genuinely spectacular. There's evil in the world, and every now and again, we get to partner with CSI, Christian Solidarity International, to combat evil in a way that is palpable, that is absolutely possible. We can free people from slavery. Doesn't seem real, does it? It's real. We in America, anyone who's listening to this program can do something about it. It is a spectacular opportunity. And I wanted my friend, Kevin McCullough, to tell us more about the opportunity because he knows about this stuff. He's worked with CSI. Kevin, welcome.
Hey, Eric. Seems like I'm on your show every day these days.
Why not?
It's good to be back. Hey, it's fun. Let's keep
it's
going.
It's more fun to talk about what great things we can do than about, you know, how difficult everything is in the United States and all our problems. This is something I keep saying. It's like what, you know, the Jews call a mitzvah. You can do a good act. It is just a spectacular thing that you can just do this thing with a certain amount of money. You can do this good thing and there's nothing to say about it. It's just all good and wonderful. And I think when you have that opportunity, you're sort of obliged to take it.
Well, you know, what's funny, Eric, is, you know, you and I live in the New York area and we rub shoulders with people that a lot of times disagree with us on a lot of things from the basis of our faith and worldview. But one thing I've never found any of them willing to criticize for is the involvement that I've had to talk about CSI and tell others about CSI and the releasing people from slavery. And I don't know if this will come through on the camera, but I wanted you to see this picture of a woman named Abouk. I want you to notice something about her face. Eric, what is that right there in the middle of her face?
It looks like pure joy as expressed in a smile, but it's more than a smile. I mean, that's kind of an amazing.
It's one of the most happiest expressions I think that has ever been captured in photography. And for those that are listening, she has this huge smile. And if you knew what this woman had been through prior to taking that picture, you would say that that smile is in fact a miracle, because that woman had no reason to have a smile that big on her face. She's also holding in this same picture a bag that says CSI on it. And people may be wondering, well, what is that bag? Why does it have CSI plastered on it? Well, that is a part of what's called the Sack of Hope that is given to these women that are liberated from slavery. And when they are begun to be relocated back to where their family originated from or where their family is at. And we've never talked about this element of it, Eric, but when you go and retrieve the slave and you bring them to the recovery camp at the border of South Sudan, and then they have some time to recover, then there's this last part of the journey, which is the going back home. But it is unlike any homecoming you've ever seen in your life. You know, this year, Mr. Fauci is saying, don't do Christmas. He's saying no Christmas for you. And we're holding to just the opposite of that in CSI. We're saying, let's make Christmas big for these slaves. And when they come in, they hold a party like you've never seen. The entire village comes out. There is a huge, enormous gathering of people that come out and they sing hymns. They sing hymns praising God for the return home of this loved one that they had. And it is absolutely unlike anything that has ever been conceived of in this particular slave's heart. Because for the years previous to that, all they have known is heartache. All they have known is indentured labor. All they've known is sexual abuse and verbal abuse and physical abuse. And at the end of the day, to come home, to have people who love you, that sing praises to God because you are free and capable of living your life again. It is that mitzvah that you were talking about. It is unlike any other good that I've ever witnessed. And it makes my heart so full.
I mean, I keep having to step outside myself. You know, you think this can't be real. It's so hard to communicate these things because we live in a country, we are so blessed with freedom, we can't begin to imagine what it would be like to live in a place where slavery is possible. Talking about living in the Iron Age or something, it doesn't seem possible from where we are. And yet, right now, it's happening. Right now, women like the woman you just showed on camera, and again, this is a radio show, but we also are on YouTube. So go to our YouTube channel, the Erickman Taxes Show, and you can see these things. But that photo, it just knocks me back because I think that's a real person.
Yeah,
that is obviously a person who is experiencing a kind of joy that doesn't seem possible in this world because we've never experienced the evil that she's experienced.
Well, and I want
you're able to do something about it.
And I want your listeners to understand something here. You've been in coordination with CSI. There are negotiations underway for 350 slaves, just like Abuk, to be released. And those negotiations are well down the path of ready to be liberated. And I'm thinking, what better Christmas present could you give a human being than to literally give them the gift of life back that they had robbed from them? Many of these women were kidnapped as teenagers or even younger. They have seen the worst dark side of humanity, repetitive rape, female genital mutilation, things that you and I wouldn't even say in front of our daughters, much less ever expect them to occur. And yet that's what the life of these women have endured over and over and over again. When CSI finds them, when they talk to the slave owners and they say, hey, here's a cattle for your vaccine that you desperately need and can't get, just let me have the freedom of this woman in exchange. And then they make that exchange. That's a powerful thing. But then to go back and to be given the sack of hope, which includes everything they need to start their new life, enough grain to feed them for a year, enough seed to plant for future years, fishing tools, micro commerce abilities with a she-goat and the ability to not only produce milk and dairy products, but also to then breed other goats. You've got an opportunity to literally give this woman who's in all likelihood for the past number of years, not had anything of her own, no personal possession, no dignity, no privacy, no ability to even keep her own name. Most of these women are given an Islamic name by the Islamist slave owner. And they are told, if you even repeat your name, if you remember your name, we'll kill you. This is the opportunity to literally give them back everything that their life has had robbed from it. And for only $250.
Kevin, I just thought of two things real quick. First of all, anybody old enough to remember the miniseries Roots in the 70s, we remember that famous moment where Kunta Kinte is insisting that is his African name. And the slave owner is forcing him, doing a horrible thing. I won't even bring it up on the air, but to take your name from you. And these are Christians being told, you are now going to be Muslim. You're never going to be able to say your Christian name. I want to say, by the way, anybody listening, if you want to share your faith with someone, can you imagine if you're able to say to somebody, in your name, I gave enough money to free someone from slavery in Africa? You want to talk about what a witness of the love of Jesus that is to somebody who maybe doesn't know anything about the God of the Bible or thinks Christians are just a bunch of kooks or something. You express your love in that way with your own money and do it in the name of someone, even if you can't do $250, whatever it is, that says something really important about what it means to be a person of the book, a person of the Bible, a person right, who worships the God that died for us. That's why it's such a wonderful thing to do around Christmas.
Well, and I think that if you ask yourself today, and maybe you're somewhere on the spectrum, maybe you said, well, I can't do 250, but could I give a monthly gift of $25 for the next 10 months? Hey, that would work. You would liberate one human life. But I know that there are a few people, Eric, listening within your listening audience that could do $25,000. and literally liberate a thousand or a hundred slaves. And the joy that you'll get, whether you're on one end of that spectrum or another, by taking the step to do it,
oh my god,
is really undescribable.
I'm going to give the phone number, folks. You can call right now, 888-253-3522. Go to our website, metaxastalk.com. You'll see the CSI banner, or call 888-253-3522. Thank you, Kevin.
The snow is snowing and the wind, it is blowing, but I can weather the storm. What do I care how much it may storm? I've got my love to keep me warm.
All right, folks, that's Dean Martin, and it sounds like he's just fine. He's got his love to keep him warm. I have a radio program to do. I have a guest on, a friend, the Reverend Howard Eddington, has written a book called The Forgotten Man of Christmas. Reverend Eddington, just great to have you.
Thank you, Eric. You know how I admire and respect you, and to have the opportunity to visit with you is a real treat.
Well, listen, I don't have guests on here lightly. When I read things like your book, The Forgotten Man of Christmas, which is the story of Joseph, I said, this is tremendous because nobody knows this. People need to know about this. So the first question I have to ask you is, what led you to write a book about Joseph? Joseph is a figure about whom we know ostensibly very little, but you have discovered all kinds of extraordinary things that I had never seen until I read your book.
Well, thank you. If you don't mind, I will give you at least a little personal aspect to this. The book actually arose out of a deep personal pain that Trisha and I experienced. Our 22-year-old son, John David, several years back, was killed in an automobile accident just 3 days before Christmas. And therefore, his death and the pain of that marked our Christmas then, obviously, but it marked every Christmas since. Well, as we struggled to find a way to turn what was for us unbearable grief into a bearable sorrow, at one point, Trisha said to me, you know, you love Christmas and John David loved Christmas. I think you ought to write a Christmas book. It'll be a way for us to honor and remember him, but it also will be a way for us each year to try to find our way through the valley of the shadow that we always experience to some extent in the midst of the joy of Christmas. Well, it's obvious that a lot of people have pain at Christmas. We're not alone in that. But once I began to dive in to trying to figure out what I would write, it was obvious to me that all of the other primary figures in the Christmas story are much researched, studied, written about, and understood even. Joseph, however, not so much.
No.
And I discovered that the reason obviously is, in the Bible, Joseph never speaks a word, not a single word. And yet, his actions, I've discovered, for at least for me, speak volumes. And so then, once I began to look at that, it became apparent that in the Gospel of Matthew, there are four dreams where God speaks directly to Joseph. And those four dreams, one after another, take you on an incredible journey through the whole experience of the first Christmas, but through the eyes of Joseph. And so I began then to dig in and to try to flesh out what was there in the Bible. And in addition to that, I had several sections in the Bible speak of Joseph to some extent, like the visit to the temple, those kinds of things, but we never have a word from him. And so his identification is muted, and consequently, he's kind of shunted to the side in the whole experience of the Christmas celebration.
Well, it's extraordinary, first of all, that to hear you say a number of things. I mean, first of all, that Joseph never spoke a word. The idea, most people think they know the Christmas story,
yeah,
but to think that Joseph never said one word, it strikes me. I've never noticed that, although it's the kind of thing you wouldn't notice, but it's extraordinary that there's not a word that he spoke. He's the silent figure. And then you tell about these four
four dreams. If somebody had said to me, how many dreams did Joseph have? Or how many? It's one of those things. It's kind of a blur when you lay it out. It's stunning to see what's really there that we've all missed. That's one of the things I loved about this book. Is just you're reading something. It's clear as a bell, and you never see it. It's stunning.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I've been preaching for 50 years, and a lot of those years I spent dealing with Christmas. But I will have to confess to you that the four dreams escaped my attention as well. I read the scripture passages. I did all of the heavy lifting in order to preach. But suddenly it all came together, and that's why I count this effort as being blessed by the Holy Spirit, because I don't think it could have occurred otherwise.
Well, I love it when something comes out that we've not seen before. You know, it's just an amazing thing. It's initially embarrassing to realize that somehow I've missed this. But then, you know, you say, well, now I don't have to miss it anymore, thanks to Dr. Howard Eddington. So I really am. I'm just so glad when I read the book to see that that you decided to home in on Joseph. And you do. You call him in the title, you know, the forgotten man of Christmas. That's quite right.
Yes, he is that. And if nothing else occurs through this book, I do hope it will lead us all to a greater appreciation of what I honestly believe was a truly extraordinary man. I label him the ideal husband and the ideal father, and that I would never have been able to do before actually diving in and beginning to understand what he had to deal with.
So many of us forget about Joseph. We think, who's the father of Jesus? Well, God the Father is the
sure.
father of Jesus. And yet, no. He had a father, an earthly father named Joseph. And you think, you know, Mary must be pretty incredible, chosen by God to
yes.
bear the Son of God. She must be the most amazing woman who ever lived. And she is. And yet,
yes.
who was chosen to be the earthly father of Jesus? Joseph. Well, he certainly must be one of the most extraordinary human beings who ever lived,
yes.
and yet we know so little. So tell us, what can we know about him that we don't know?
Well, I think there are a variety of things. And first of all, let me just start by saying that he was extraordinarily tough, resourceful, and yet he was equally tender and sensitive. And that combination you see right from the very beginning when he has to deal with the fact that here he is betrothed to Mary. That was a legally binding contract. The couple were required then to live completely apart for 9 months to a year, the reason being there couldn't be a child born into the union until the purity and the fidelity issues had been established. And so that was the reason for betrothal. So here they are. They are called husband and wife, but living completely apart. And then suddenly he discovers that Mary is with child. And how to deal with that, the shock of that, I tried to put myself into his shoes a bit. And one of the things I use, the phrase I suppose I ought to apologize for, holy imagination. I have sections in the book that I call How It Must Have Been, where I try to put myself into Joseph's circumstance
right.
and begin to think through what he had to deal with and try to articulate that. So you begin right from the very beginning to see what an extraordinary man he is as he begins to deal with the implications of what had occurred. Now, if just one little aside here, and I have a lot of little asides in the book that I kind of enjoyed putting in there. The genealogy in Matthew, which comes first, traces Joseph back through all the way to Abraham, but particularly to David, because the Old Testament promise was that the Messiah would come from the line of David. Well, Joseph's lineage takes him back to Solomon, the firstborn son of David and Bathsheba. That was the royal line. And so the implication is that Joseph is actually in the royal line of Israel. And what's so fascinating to me, I'd missed this for years, when the angel first speaks to Joseph, the angel says, Joseph, son of David. That was the term that was always used to speak of the kings of Israel, son of David. And so here is the angel saying to Joseph, son of David, you are in the king's line. And the implication of that is that if Israel had remained self-governing through all of those years and no longer under the control of others, Joseph more than likely would have been the king of Israel.
I mean, this is extraordinary stuff here. We're also talking about, I mean, this is a big question, but it's always so confusing when they talk about the lineage of Jesus going through Joseph. I think most people think, wait a minute, who cares? Joseph was not a blood relation. How does that work?
Well, the reason it, I think that Matthew was writing primarily the Jewish people. And so the genealogy in Matthew is designed to demonstrate that Jesus was, in fact, the Messiah. And in order to be the Messiah, you had to have the proof of that line back to David. Another little aside that I have here is that Titus Vespasian in 70 AD invaded the Holy Land.
Oh, you know what, Dr. Eddington, hold that thought. Sure. We're going to go to a break. We're going to have a little Burl Ives Christmas music, and we'll be right back talking about this wonderful new book, The Forgotten Man of Christmas, Joseph's Story by Dr. Howard Eddington. Stick around.
Kiss her once for me. Have a holly jolly Christmas. And in case you didn't.
Folks, it's the Eric Metaxas Show. Hey, guess what? It's Christmas. We're talking to Dr. Howard Eddington, who wrote a book, I'm holding it in my hands, called The Forgotten Man of Christmas, Joseph's Story. And Dr. Eddington, I was asking you about the genealogy. In other words, when we're talking about Jesus, the genealogy, people always say that Jesus is the son of David, and you can trace him back and on and on and on. But it's traced back through Joseph, which, of course, is confusing because we all know that Joseph was not his biological father.
Not his biological father, but the term that I use, Eric, is the designated father of Jesus, designated by God, chosen by God to be the father of Jesus. Had nothing to do with the biological process in which Jesus was born, but has everything to do with who Jesus became in his human life and his journey on this earth.
Well, right, because he was raised by Joseph. And again, we forget this. We forget that he was raised. It's such a strange thing for us to forget, because what could be more important than who raised Jesus? I mean, we just act as though he, you know, came out of the brow of Athena, and he didn't. He was born of a woman. And he had a father who raised him, and, you know, so that's why it's so extraordinary to read this book and to get into the stories of who Joseph was. You were saying something about Titus. I didn't pick it up just when we went to the break.
Yeah, Titus Vespasian, the Roman general, invaded the Holy Land and destroyed cities and killed millions of people. But the critical thing for this story is he destroyed, he knew how important the genealogical records are to the Jewish people. He destroyed all the genealogical records that existed in Israel in 70 AD. That means there is no way now to trace and prove the line of David.
Oh, that's extraordinary.
But Jesus was under that line, and that's clear.
Oh, and of course, he was related to Bathsheba.
Yes.
I mean, that's just incredible.
That is. Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
If you just want to know, you know, what good can come out of that? Well, Jesus, for starters.
Exactly. And that's a pretty good starter for that.
I mean, right? It's, but that's that's the lesson. Okay, so tell us more about what we don't know about Joseph.
Well, I think the important thing that I do, as I believe it's important, is to trace how he dealt with the circumstances that he was confronted with. virtually all of which he never asked for, never invited, but they just came, whether he was dealing with Mary's pregnancy, whether he was dealing with a trip to Bethlehem, with Mary being great with child. That was not an easy journey, and that was tough. Then they get to Bethlehem, and there's no place for them in the inn. I don't mind telling you, Eric, I spent a lot of years in the pulpit occasionally taking a shot at the innkeeper in Bethlehem. Well, the fact of the matter is there wasn't an innkeeper. The word that's used in the Bible is kataluma, which means public shelter. There were these public shelters built in towns for travelers, just a floor with a roof and sometimes maybe walls, a fire pit in the center, and people just bedded down on the floor.
It's kind of like a lean-to on the Appalachian Trail.
Exactly, yes. And it was usually built over a cave, and the animals were housed in the cave because people traveled with animals then. And that's the facility that they had to deal with when they got to Bethlehem. And in the Jewish tradition, birth is a huge celebration, and there are women all around, the midwife, the mother, female relatives. There's a kind of a almost a party atmosphere. In this instance, they're in a cave under a public shelter in Bethlehem. None of that is there. No support. Mary is all alone. The only other person there is Joseph. And I try to imagine what Joseph must have been thinking and feeling during all of that, and how he tried to minister to Mary as the birth occurred. And my surmise is that he is the one who first received the infant into the world. And what he must have thought at that point, I tried to imagine in the book.
It's just unbelievable, really, when you look at these things. And again, it's always fascinating to see that it's there, but I never saw it before. I never thought of this before. I'm so glad you decided to dig into this and to bring it out. I think a lot of sermons are going to be preached on the back of your book, Howard Eddington, because people are going to say, this is tremendous. I got to tell my people about this. There's just so much in here. Tell us there are four dreams. Tell us right. A little bit about that.
All right. The first dream is when the angel speaking for God says to Joseph, Joseph, son of God, the child in Mary is of the Holy Spirit. Take Mary to be your wife and take her to your home. That's the first dream. And so that's where the story begins, and as we know it. And then you go from there to Bethlehem. And then at Bethlehem, the birth occurs. And then the shepherds come. We can be reasonably certain that they arrived probably on that very night, because it speaks of the glory. And the Old Testament speaks of the Shekinah glory of God as being so overpowering that you cannot look at it. Moses, God says, you can't look at me. When the
right, it's that stunning. Let's hang on there. We're going to go to some more Christmas music. We're going to be back, folks. The new book is called "The Forgotten Man of Christmas: Joseph's Story" by Dr. Howard Eddington. We'll be right back.
Into man and Christmas like a lullaby.
Grandma got run over by a reindeer, walking home from our house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as Santa, but as for me and Grandpa, we believe.
Hey, folks, that's right out of Scripture. Look it up. It's hidden there in the Luke narrative, but Grandma got run over by a reindeer. That happened. You need to deal with the facts. Actually, that's not true. But what we're talking about is true. We're talking about the story of Joseph in the Gospels. The new book about it is called The Forgotten Man of Christmas, Joseph's Story. Absolutely fascinating. The author's Dr. Howard Eddington, who's on the line. Dr. Eddington, again, it's just, I cannot get over how much is in here that we missed. You just shared about probably Joseph was the one who delivered Jesus. Wow.
I cannot escape that reality.
Incredible. God comes into the world, and Joseph, he's the man. There he is.
And he's we have to keep remembering, he was very young. He was probably no more than 19 or 20, Mary being 15 or 16. He was just a carpenter at that point in his life, a simple, ordinary guy. And yet suddenly he's having to deal with all of this enormously significant happenings all around him.
It's amazing. We know that he was around when Jesus was 12.
Right.
But we don't know beyond that how long he lived. We know that he died by the time Jesus begins his ministry at age 30. So he died quite young. Of course, we don't know how he died.
Right. We don't. And that's one of the mysteries that I intend to ask the Lord when I get to heaven.
Yeah. But, you can ask Joseph.
That's right. I intend to do that. But in any case, the fact is that is also part of the reason, I think, that he kind of disappears in the wings of the Christmas story.
Yeah.
Is not center stage. But at any rate, once in Bethlehem, then we know, when you read the Bible carefully, it says when the wise men came, they didn't come immediately. Our nativity scenes seem to portray that they came immediately, but not so. It says they came to the house, so they were no longer in a public shelter. They were now in a house. Jesus was a toddler. That word actually appears in Scripture. It says when they saw the child, and the Greek word there is paideon, which means toddler. That's the word we get pediatrician from. And so Jesus by this time is a toddler, and that's why King Herod, when he decided to destroy the infant Jesus, had to have a window of time in which to make his decision, and he pegged it at 2 years, and that's why he declared that all of the male children under 2 years in the region of Bethlehem were to be killed.
Right. So so when we picture the wise men standing at the creche,
yeah,
that's just fiction. They came about a year later or more.
It could be, yes. We don't know exactly how much, but certainly given the window of time that Herod decreed,
right,
you have to assume that.
Right. Okay. And go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say that sequence of events then set off what I regard as being the most incredible challenge that Joseph faced, and the way he handled it demonstrates his enormous courage and bravery.
And what is that?
That's the second dream where the angel says to him, Herod is going to kill the child, take the child and his mother and go to Egypt. Well, here he is. He's got a young family. He's all alone. He doesn't have a security guard or a force. He has no means of his own other than his own resourcefulness. And so he takes this young family and strikes out across the deserts, down to Hebron and then over the Sinai to the Gaza Strip and into the Egyptian border and then another long journey down to Cairo.
And how long do we think they were in Egypt?
We think, and there are wonderful stories about that, Eric, that are just fascinating to me, but we think at least a year. If you kind of figure the time and the time of Herod's death, it seems that would be about logical. And the thing that I really love, the Coptic Church in Egypt, which is all the time in our news now, sadly, those people are basically the descendants of the people who took care of the Holy Family in Egypt. And they have wonderful stories and legends and tales about what occurred during that time. We have no earthly idea about the truth of all of that, but it certainly adds a dimension of really joy and happiness that these people took the family in. If you go to the St. Sergius Church in Cairo, underneath that church is where there was a family home, and that's the family that took the Holy Family in.
This is what I'm saying. I can't believe I've never heard this, that Jesus, the legend says he was in Cairo.
Yes.
I mean, we know theoretically they go to Egypt, it says it, but we don't know where in Egypt. You're telling me that for 2,000 years these legends have been kept alive, that Jesus was in Cairo.
Yes.
My goodness.
And the Coptic Christians, our sisters and brothers in the Egyptian Coptic Church, are the ones who have preserved that through the centuries, and that's why I have a special place in my heart for them.
Now, is that in the book? Because I read the book, but it's so long ago now that I forget everything.
Yes, it is in there.
Okay.
In the part about where I traced the journey to Egypt.
Well, no, I've got the book right here, but I read it when it was still in manuscript form, and I read things and I forget them, so I need to be reminded.
Well, it's not like you don't have other things to
do. Well, that's the problem. But it's just so fascinating to me to suddenly think, yeah, Jesus was in Cairo, and we think we know exactly where he was, and he was about 1.5 years old. I mean, it's amazing, absolutely amazing.
It is. And the other reason that I take a deep dive into King Herod, because I think it's important to realize not only what a monster he was, but the power of his military reach.
Yeah.
And when you contrast that power with a single carpenter and his wife and a small child, and you begin to realize it took an incredible man to make that journey to Egypt, to serve as the protector and the provider during that time in Egypt. And then ultimately, of course, the third dream comes and the angel says to Joseph, Herod died.
Herod is dead. You can go home.
Yeah.
Okay, we're gonna go to another break here. But this is it's just extraordinary to think. First of all, we have to say, before I go to the break, I have to say that what makes Joseph so great is he was a man of faith. He believed in God. So when you get a dream from an angel, if you believe it, you know, everything can be fine. But if you don't believe it, so this was a man that God knew he could trust him to do the right thing. We're going to be right back talking about The Forgotten Man of Christmas by Dr. Howard Eddington. Stick around.
Santa Claus ain't daddy, then I'm going to tell on them. Well, Santa looked a lot like daddy, or daddy looked a lot like him. It's not the
come down to the manger, see the little stranger wrapped in swaddling, Lord, the Prince of Peace. The wheels start turning, torches start burning, and behold, wise men journey from the east.
Hey, folks, that is The Band. That is a song you might not know. Beautiful Christmas song by The Band. I actually covered it. I think you can find my version of it on my website, but what a beautiful song. We're talking to the author of The Forgotten Man of Christmas, Joseph's Story, Dr. Howard Eddington. Dr. Eddington, just a few minutes left. What must we tell my listeners before we go?
I think the one thing that I would want your listeners to understand is that, and I do this in the last part of the book, I take the qualities and the character of Jesus and then impute that back to Joseph and trace how those characters and characteristics and qualities should undoubtedly have emerged from his experience with Joseph. Joseph was, as you said, clearly a man of extraordinary faith. He did exactly what God told him. He didn't need to speak a word. He did what God told him to do. And when you begin to look at the character of Jesus and the things that he stood for and the things he did in his life and ministry on earth, then you look back and you can see, I believe, quite clearly where those things occurred. They came to him directly from his designated father, Joseph.
It is wild. And again, just to think, God chose Joseph. We forget. God chose this man. How great must he have been? What a man of character. We focus too little on him, which is, again, another reason I'm so excited that you wrote the book. And the book is just out, correct?
Yes.
Brand new. So people can, you know that sermons are going to be preached. I don't know if people are going to get this in time for Christmas. I hope they do, and they can get a couple of great sermons out of it. It is just so rich, the information in here. Are you going on a tour to talk about this book, or are you going to stay home this Christmas?
No, I'm staying home this Christmas. We're up here snowbound in the beautiful mountains of North Carolina, and loving it here. But I'm at least having the opportunity to do some interviews like this that you have afforded me, and hopefully that will help the word to get out.
Well, it is. I mean, it's the sort of thing, again, when you find something so central, I mean, the Christmas story doesn't get more central than that. This is not, you know, something you found in Habakkuk or something. This is the Christmas story, and there's so much in it that we've missed. So thanks to you, we haven't missed it. I'm really excited about it. I hope the book goes far. It is so many people. Rich DeVos read it and gives it a wonderful blurb, and a number of other authors that I know. The eldest daughter of Billy Graham, Gigi Graham, who must live near you, correct?
Yes, she does.
She's got to live near you.
Great friend, yeah.
And it's just really a wonderful, wonderful thing that you got this out. So, Howard or Dr. Eddington, I got to tell you, this is a great work. Congratulations on it.
Thank you very much, Eric, and I salute you for Luther and all of the magnificent writing you do to build the kingdom. Bless you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Folks, that's the program. Get a copy of The Forgotten Man of Christmas, Joseph's Story by Howard Eddington. Just amazing. Stick around.
All is bright, bright.